Tired of the negative news and flash over substance? It's time for Today with Dr. Wendy. Dr. Wendy Patrick is a trial attorney, patriot, and PhD with a passion for people and a penchant for politics. Dr. Wendy brings you the headlines, streamlined news you can use. It's time to be informed, engaged, and entertained. Now, here's your host, Dr. Wendy Patrick.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of Today with Dr. Wendy. We have a great show for you tonight. And as always, we're starting with a fascinating guest. Larry, who are we lucky enough to have on the line?
Jeffrey Katz is a lifelong student and teacher of rationalist religious philosophy. He became fascinated in his youth by his discovery of the ancient wisdom of Maimonides and received rabbinic ordination while focusing on disseminating the ancient life-changing wisdom he had uncovered. Jeffrey Katz is a practicing attorney, has appeared on national television, lectured widely on a broad range of issues, and is the author of the book, The Secret Life, A Book of Wisdom from the Great Teacher. He's a graduate of Columbia College, Columbia Law School, and the Manhattan Talmudic Academy. His rabbinic ordination from Yeshivat Pirshi Shoshanim has taught about Maimonides for over 25 years in numerous public and private settings. Jeffrey Katz has a new book out titled Rules to Live By, Maimonides' Guide to a Wonderful Life, that we'll be discussing tonight. Welcome to the program, Jeffrey.
It's great to be with you, Larry, and Dr. Wendy. Terrific. Great to be here.
Hey, you have a very illustrious background. It was always hard trying to figure out where do I even start. I love the titles of your book, but I think I'll ask you, how did you as a practicing attorney develop such a keen interest in the writing of one of the greatest Jewish philosophers of the medieval period?
Yeah, well, it's a great question, Wendy. And the truth is, Maimonides was kind of both the top doctor of his time, the top lawyer of his time, if you will. He was a top jurist and judge, as well as, the doctor to the king of Egypt, basically, who was the sultan in Cairo at the time. So he really was in all these different worlds. He was one of the greatest spiritualists who ever lived. And his, in every major university, his philosophy is dealt with, along with the philosophy of Aristotle and St. Thomas Aquinas. So he really is, Maimonides is an incredible figure because he was top in his era in all of these different areas, medicine, law, philosophy, and spirituality, as much or more than anything else. So he gave us these practical rules that give us balance and happiness kind of in the different areas of our lives. And I kind of just stumbled onto his philosophy. I was going to, when I was in college, as many years ago, I was just going home for Passover one year to my house. My father left for me on the kind of coffee table, this book about Maimonides, and kind of the rest is history. As soon as I saw his practical wisdom and his really unbelievably profound and simple ideas, it was really, they're really transformative and a game changer. Looking forward to discussing some of them.
I know Maimonides taught some very important maxims, such as, I've heard this one before actually, give a man a fish and you feed him for a day, teach a man to fish and you feed him for a lifetime. Did Maimonides have any beliefs when it came to finances? I mean, what were his beliefs on that?
Oh, yeah. No, a lot. And, finances are part and parcel of one's charitable life. People think that one, has to be wealthy and then he becomes charitable or becomes a philanthropist. Maimonides taught us that it's just the opposite, that it's really a philanthropic mindset that can actually lead to great wealth. You don't do it. You don't do charitable things. You don't do worthwhile projects in order to become wealthy. But that's one of the ways just God created the world. And it's not a coincidence. If one devotes a certain amount, even if he's poor, even if he has no money to spare, but if someone devotes some of his time and energy to some kind of worthwhile value or cause or idea that he or she believes in, the first thing that does for you is it gives you an emotional detachment from money because you're volunteering. So you're emotionally distancing yourself from money. And that's the number one quality Maimonides teaches that one needs in order to make great financial decisions, right? Because a surgeon is never, no matter how great a surgeon he or she is, they're never going to operate on their own children because they're just too close to the situation. So you have to be removed a little bit from a situation. So by developing an emotional detachment from money that being involved in charitable causes and giving of yourself does, it gives you that very basic, really the primary skill you need, emotional detachment from money to make terrific financial decisions. I mean, also, when you get involved in a charitable project and you give of your time and energy, even if not your money, you become a magnet for other people in your community because, you know, it's so attractive. People want to get involved in worthwhile local projects. Not only do you become a magnet in your community, but you wind up establishing a network of some of the most successful and affluent people in the community who also want to get involved in these terrific and worthwhile projects. So it winds up you build up for yourself through these charitable projects. And you don't do it for that reason, but these are just the natural outgrowths of it. You can establish for yourself a network of social and at the end of the day, financial contacts that you'll be able to avail yourself of wonderful job opportunities and investment opportunities just because of the of the high quality of the contacts that you make. To say nothing for young people, you know, very often if you get involved in a worthwhile local project, you know, you need to raise a little bit of money and you need to manage that in order to be effective and accomplish your need that you're filling. Can you imagine the budgetary skills and the operational and management experience you get doing that? You think that's the kind of skill any business might be interested in?
So yes.
By doing these things and becoming involved in productive, charitable projects, again, it's not the wealth that creates the charitable mindset, but just the opposite, as Maimonides teaches us.
What does it teach us about the value of the family, focus on the family and all of that? How is that sort of addressed?
Oh, yeah. Now, Maimonides teaches us very profound principles for dealing with one's family that creates just the most beautiful family, rich family traditions. I mean, for example, I mean, one thing by becoming involved in some kind of charitable project, that's a value that you can teach to your children, and you could make that a part of your family life, doing a group project. What better way to spend time with your family than and your children and to teach them values than by doing some worthwhile, project? Also, Maimonides teaches that with respect to one's children, you have to become their advisor, not their boss. Like, a parent should never try to control the lives of his children, because then one only buys resentment or, you know, possibly even hatred for himself. The way to do it is, Maimonides teaches about rationale and reason. Once the child becomes old enough to be able to reason, as a parent, you should tell your child, well, you have this decision to make. If you make this decision, consequences are likely to follow. If you make another decision, other consequences are likely to follow. And in that way, you help your child develop judgment. And that's what children need in order to become strong decision makers on their own, develop their own judgment so they can withstand all the bombardment from outside that's coming to them. Because if you don't teach your children judgment and values, there are many other people waiting in the wings who want to instill theirs in your kids. And, you know, children are like trees. Trees need to be watered, but if you overwater them, the tree won't develop deep roots and will be a very weak tree, won't be strong, because the tree doesn't have to go deep. The roots don't have to go deep to get the water because you're overwatering it. It's the same thing with kids. If you control their lives and make all the decisions for them, then it does not allow them to develop their independent analysis, skills of analysis and independent judgment, and then they're going to be prey to all of these messages bombarding them all day from the outside. So that's with kids. Maimonides has very valuable lessons also to teach that are the keys to happiness with one's spouse and also with one's parents. So he really has an awful lot to say about the family as well.
Jeffrey, I've got to ask this question. Was Maimonides, with all his wisdom, a believer in God?
Oh, He was not only a believer in God, he was perhaps the believer in God and the greatest believer in God. Maimonides believed that just like a child cannot be happy, a small child can't be happy unless he has a strong link to his parents. So too, Maimonides taught that no person can be happy unless he or she has a strong link with God. And Maimonides taught us how to develop that link with God. He teaches that it's through our mind because, you know, our mind is the noblest aspect of ourselves, and God is the greatest thing we can think of. So by thinking about God in the correct way, we build up, according to Maimonides, a mental tunnel or a mental bridge up to God. And it's through, the trick is that it's through that same mental bridge or mental tunnel that we build up to God that God looks down upon us and watches us and watches over us. And it's through that same bridge or tunnel that we've built up that God will send down ideas, for example. God will implant an idea in our mind in order to help us through a tough situation or something we're confronting. You know, it's like a radio. So according to Maimonides, there is a divine overflow, which is an overflowing abundance of wisdom and knowledge and ideas and love emanating from God at all times. The trick is to be able to receive it. Now, how do you receive it? It's like a radio. You know, you have to tune yourself correctly. So how do you do that? It's, again, it's like a radio. You remove the static, and then you pick up the reception. The static is all of the negativity, all of the grudges and the gossip and the focusing on negative aspects of people and envy, all of this negativity that sucks out your emotional power and your mental energies. That's all a distraction. If that's what your energies are focusing on, you can't pick up the divine overflow. It's when you train your character to eliminate all of that negativity that then one becomes receptive and will more clearly receive the divine overflow.
And wow, that's great.
We're at the end of the show, so quick website, and then we're going to have to wrap it up. It's been so nice having you on. Where can people buy your book?
Terrific. Thanks so much. So it's available all over. It's Rules to Live by me, Rabbi Jeffrey Katz, Maimonides' Guide to a Wonderful Life. And it's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target.
Awesome.
Available wherever any books are sold. And if they click through on Amazon, they can get a lot of information about me and the books.
Terrific. Thank you, Jeffrey.
Thank you so much. And don't touch that dial. We're coming right back for a second half of Today with Dr. Wendy.
News cycle lowlights have no place here. You're listening to the headline highlights on Today with Dr. Wendy on The Answer San Diego.
Since 1991, the nonprofit National Law Center for Children and Families has been fighting to protect children from sexual exploitation. The National Law Center offers the latest investigative training techniques to police, probation officers, and prosecutors on fighting sexual predators and human traffickers. The NLC also offers human trafficking awareness training to members of the public. Schedule a training for your church or organization today by visiting nationallawcenter.org. That's nationallawcenter.org.
It's time for more news you can use. The headlines streamline. It's time for more Today with Dr. Wendy. Now here's your host, Dr. Wendy Patrick.
Welcome back to Today with Dr. Wendy. I'm Wendy Patrick, and my co-host Larry Dersham and I have a terrific second half for you. Larry, what topic do we have queued up?
Yeah, we're going to be talking about the Elvis Act. Everybody knows about Elvis, right? Well, this is the Elvis Act. It's actually a legislation, and it stands for the Ensuring Likeness, Voice, and Image Security Act, or the Elvis Act for short. It's an updated version of Tennessee's old right of publicity law. While the old law protected an artist's name, photograph, and likeness, the new legislation includes AI-specific protections.
You know, one of the things that really struck me about this is we have spent years protecting literary works and names and avatars and all sorts of different rhythms. We've had jury trials where jurors have had to listen to one song and then listen to another and see if it's a copyright violation. I appreciate that Tennessee is the birthplace of country music, and it's only fair that the V in Elvis stands for voice, and that's what we're talking about in protecting this likeness. But I do have to say, you know, are we sure that this is something that can actually even be done? I mean, or are we at a point where artificial intelligence has just gotten too good to really be able to tell for sure whether something is a copy?
Right. Well, I have to go back to my wise mother. And my mother used to say this, and I'm sure she got it from her mother, and who knows, maybe from Benjamin Franklin or somebody like that. She used to say, never believe anything you hear and only half what you see. Well, today, that advice has never been more true than with this new AI and what it can do. And I'll give you an example.
Part of the interesting thing, and I know your example will probably fit right in, is, you know, this is a day and age where Congress is actually trying to push forward legislation that would have more teeth, that would provide more safety and security for those that are afraid of their likenesses being stolen. I mean, look what just happened to Taylor Swift, where you can just really just baffle everybody that doesn't look close enough that something is real. Remember the Joe Biden robocall that went out to all those voters that, of course, wasn't the president's voice, but it sure sounded like it. So there's such a wide variety of ways in which this could be misused. I mean, come on, hello, we have an election coming up in November, for one thing. You know, do give us an example of what this actually could look like and why this new law is necessary.
Yeah, well, how about this, Wendy? Last year, that'd be 2023, music fans responded with disbelief after an anonymous TikTok user used AI to simulate the voice of artists Drake and The Weeknd to create a viral song entitled Heart on My Sleeve. The artist label owner Universal Music Group invoked copyright violation to get the song removed from platforms, including TikTok, Spotify, and YouTube. But I'll tell you, Wendy, I researched this. You can pull that song. You can still pull that song up. It's called Heart on My Sleeve by Drake. And there's another group or a person called The Weeknd. And it's amazing. It sounds so good. But here's how they did it, really briefly. They used, you know, drums, they used keyboards and so forth. And somebody, some artist somewhere actually mouthed the words, said the words, but they can use with AI a timbre that makes the singer sound exactly like whoever you want it to be. Like in this case, the famous rapper Drake. And so that's a real danger. You could make it sound exactly like you, Wendy, or exactly like me, and fool a lot of people.
You know, what's scary about that is like you said, the ease with which we can do it. But I also want to say, I think people also got to remember that there are both civil and criminal remedies, at least in some states. More and more have criminal remedies, but civil remedies have been around a long time. I mean, civil cases include things like copyright law, likeness rights, torts like invasion of privacy, intentional infliction of emotional distress. How about that one? And now what we're seeing is, you know, just last week, you have these key provisions in new legislation that would require products to have digital watermarks or metadata. Larry, couldn't those be fake too?
Oh, yeah, it could all be faked. Now, there, you can research on the internet. I did this this week to find out how to kind of find or discover which photos, for example, are real and which are fake. Just little things. For example, they have a picture of the Pope that he's wearing a white puffer jacket. But if you look at his hands, the way he's holding that cup in his hands, you can tell that that's fake. There's another one that just kind of blew me away. It shows a picture of President Trump being arrested. It looks so real. You've got to do a double take. So just imagine how dangerous this could be, where they're, you know, the high school girls who have experienced life-altering deep fake porn using their faces. Or how about elderly citizens convinced to hand over their life savings to a voice clone of their grandchild who claims to be in trouble? And
that one's been around for a while. And you know, you mentioned the one about the high school girls. That's a prime example of some of this emotional distress that results from, you know, when we were growing up, people said, oh, if you don't want naked pictures of yourself on the internet, don't take any. Well, guess what? Now you don't have to take any.
Right.
And somehow it is still there. It's been artificially artificially generated. Larry, do you really think that, you know, the new federal legislation, and I know this, I say that and our listeners are thinking, yeah, which one? And I think that's a good point, is there have been several provisions within the last couple of years that we've tried to move through. Do you ever think we're actually going to have a federal law that regulates these, this issue of watermarks or metadata or some kind of tag that identifies something as artificial intelligence?
I think there's going to be federal legislation at some point. This thing is taking off like I've never seen anything take off. Talk about going viral. AI has gone viral. Everybody's talking about it, and a lot of people are using it. And, you know, it's easy to get a hold of software that can do AI things. And I think it's going to have to eventually go to the federal level, and probably it'll be tested in the U.S. Supreme Court, because you got, on one hand, you know, freedom of speech, the First Amendment right. You have people on that side arguing, hey, you can't stop me from doing this. It's freedom of speech, you know. But on the other side, people's lives can be seriously damaged and even put in danger if this gets in the wrong hands.
You read my mind. That's exactly what I was going to say is, you know, we tend to think it's all about music and photographs and voice, but actually it could be far more sinister if something like that were to happen. But because I always want to be the silver lining, it's true, isn't it, that there have been some real breakthroughs with the use of AI in music, since that's our underlying sort of springboard here. I think there was something you found regarding the Beatles being able to release their final song. What was that all about?
Yeah, it was a final song, and I believe it was released just last year. The title of the song is Now and Then, and they use AI in some capacity to put that song together. So imagine this. I mean, two of the Beatles are no longer with us, and they were able to put out a new song, or actually it was a song they had written but never, I guess, published out, just like they were there in person doing it. And yeah, so that was kind of a cool, good use of it, I would say, AI.
You know, when we talk about this Tennessee law, we think about, well, that's only makes sense. That's where country music was born. That's where you might have a lot of faking of vocals and lyrics. You know, here in California, we also, you know, we have Hollywood. And, you know, I just wonder whether what we're seeing is more of a localized impact of AI in areas where there would be different types of likenesses, if you will. I mean, if there were a literary capital of the U.S., which no doubt there is, that would probably be a place where you might see some landmark legislation in that arena. And you just wonder, you said it's headed to the Supreme Court. How could the Supreme Court ever come up with a rule or a case or a principle, a tenet, that could possibly cover all of the different forms of false information that AI can promulgate?
Yeah, well, I think it's probably, there'll be a number of cases, because they'll make a ruling on one, I would guess, and then there'll be another use of AI that they'll have to make its way up to the Supreme Court, too. I'm not sure. Once this technology is released, it's going to be really hard, I think, to control. And it's really interesting, too, that this was launched in Tennessee, this new law, the Elvis Act, and Luke Bryan and Chris Jansen, who are huge country music songwriters and performers, were complaining and said, "You know, I got to feed my family. If they can, you know, copy my voice, it sounds exactly like me. You know, I'm going to lose money." And
well, you know what that reminds me of, Larry, is how actors have been complaining. You know, I mentioned Hollywood and LA, and what laws are we going to have in California? Actors have been complaining that, you know, you can just hire my avatar or my AI likeness, and then that, you know, that would probably be a lot cheaper. It might be a copyright violation, but that's the direction that some people fear that we're headed. I'll give you another one, Larry, and I think we should use this as a standalone topic one of these days: de-aging. You have some actors that have, I guess, supposedly been de-aged in some of the roles that they've taken. I mean, geez, wouldn't that be great? And it brings me back full circle to the idea of that Pope photograph being identified more easily than others. It's because the Pope wouldn't wear a jacket like that. So too, there's almost this buyer beware idea that when we look and we consume material, we should bring our common sense with us, just like I tell my jurors when they come into the courtroom, and that we should look and think, is that out of character for somebody to actually be doing that, saying that, wearing that? And in that sense, maybe there's a little bit of an onus for us to do a bit of due diligence ourselves. What do you think?
Oh, no, absolutely there is. But check this out. Lanny Wilson, she's a really famous music star. She said they used her likeness, and she said she told Congress, she was before Congress, she called it a gut punch. It is to have your name, your likeness, and your voice ripped off from you and used in ways that you would never imagine or would never allow. So it is hurting people in the present tense, and so it's going to have to be controlled. But the Congress is aware of it now, and they make laws. And that's like, right. I said, it's going to go federal, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, and you know, let's end with that. That's a high note. As we know about it, we're savvy, we're looking out for it, and we're warning other people to be very careful. So we will pick it up again next weekend, 6 p.m. Saturday night. We will see you next week. And between now and then, have a great week and God bless you.
Thank you for joining us for Today with Dr. Wendy. You can learn more about Dr. Wendy and how to become a guest or sponsor of the show by visiting WendyPatrickPhD.com. That's WendyPatrickPhD.com. Tune in every week at this same time as Dr. Wendy will engage and inspire you with an upbeat viewpoint on the highlights of the day. This has been Today with Dr. Wendy on The Answer San Diego.
Since 1991, the nonprofit National Law Center for Children and Families has been fighting to protect children from sexual exploitation. The National Law Center offers the latest investigative training techniques to police, probation officers, and prosecutors on fighting sexual predators and human traffickers. The NLC also offers human trafficking awareness training to members of the public. Schedule a training for your church or organization today by visiting nationallawcenter.org. That's nationallawcenter.org.